All right.
And I'm Jana. I don't even know how to respond to that, really. It's a very atypical introduction. Hi, Ben.
How's it going?
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Dr. Jana Reese and Dr. Benjamin Knoll have put together the largest survey of Mormon attitudes. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the biggest surprises from this survey. Do Mormons really adhere to the word of wisdom, which forbids alcohol, tobacco, and coffee? We'll find out more, and you may be surprised at some of these results. Check out our conversation. By the way, I'm going to be giving away this copy of The Next Mormons to the winner of our drawing. In order to enter, just subscribe to my free newsletter at gospeltangents.com/newsletter. In our final segment with Jana and Ben, I will draw a name out of the hat and we'll figure out who will be the winner of this book. So if you want a copy of this book for free, please sign up for my newsletter. And newsletter subscribers are already in, so you don't need to sign up twice. Now back to our conversation. But Jana, so tell us, what was the most surprising result that you felt that came out of the survey?
There were several big surprises, one of which was how many current Mormons, apparently, especially younger ones, are drinking coffee, which Ben actually emailed me that day when we were both analyzing data separately. He's like, have you seen this? So that was interesting. Basically, it was 4 out of 10.
And these are not just everyday Mormons, but these are active temple-going Mormons,
well,
right?
Sort of. When you tease that out by age, it's very interesting what happens, because for older Mormons who said that they had had coffee, for example, in the last 6 months, it's primarily people who are less active in the church and don't hold a temple recommend. But for younger Mormons, there was some overlap in those categories. Even people who said that they were very active or who did hold a temple recommend sometimes apparently are drinking coffee or alcohol.
You guys didn't distinguish between those, right?
No, we did.
Yes.
The word of wisdom question was very specific. Caffeinated coffee, decaffeinated coffee, tobacco, alcohol, marijuana, other psychedelics. I mean, it was all these different variables that you can imagine. I think the one that I wish that we had included was vaping, because that has become a very interesting trend in Utah. There have been several articles about how many Utah teens are vaping, and it would be interesting in a future study to find out what they think about that and if they believe that's a violation of the word of wisdom or not.
Because it's not tobacco-based, right?
Right. I had an interesting conversation, actually, totally anecdotally, but with a seminary teacher who said that some of his students vape, and they are otherwise active in the church, but they don't think that, because it's lower, apparently, tobacco, at least to some degree, they don't think that it's a violation of the word of wisdom.
Oh, really?
And the church has not yet issued any kind of statement about that. So it's, for the moment, for the next 5 minutes, occupying a gray area in which there is no official guidance.
Well, and that was interesting to me, too. So I'll tell you a conversation I had with my 14-year-old daughter that really surprised me at. Because I told my wife, I said, can you believe 4 out of 10 temple, and I said temple-going Mormons, is that not necessarily?
No, it's lower, but like I said, there is some overlap, but it's not that much.
Right, the proportion goes down the more active you get, right? And I forget the exact numbers, but it's like amongst those who say they're active, it would be somewhere around 20 to 30%-ish. I'd have to check my numbers.
Yeah.
But even amongst temple recommend holding, or people who say that I'm a current temple recommend holding member of the church, is somewhere between 10 and 15%. So it's still lower.
For some reason, for sure. I was thinking it was like 36, 38%. But I use that number, so maybe I use a bad number with my daughter. But I'll tell you this.
Oh, I think any use of data with teenagers in the approach of good parenting is entirely valid. No ethical qualms with that whatsoever.
So according to Jana's book here, 4 out of 10 temple-going Mormons, that was the way I phrased it, drink coffee or alcohol. And my daughter was not the least bit surprised that she knew people like that. And I assume at 14 it's probably coffee, not alcohol. At least that's my hope. I would think that would be less of a problem. But she was like, oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. Mm. And so it surprised me. It surprised my wife. And she's, in fact, I remember my wife said, well, they're not good Mormons.
Interesting. Well, and that's a generational question as well is the definition of what it means to be a good Mormon changing. We actually had a question about that specifically. Do you think that the following things are essential to an identity as a good Mormon? Important but not essential, not very important or not at all important, one of which was the word of wisdom. And there was interesting generational change in that younger Mormons were less likely to say that keeping the word of wisdom was an essential part of a Mormon identity compared to their parents and grandparents.
Yeah, well, interesting.
So you're living out what the stats are showing, for sure. You know, another thing that surprised me, completely unrelated, is that we, I think many people in the Mormon experience have the understanding that there are, you know, single women in the church are outnumbering single men by a factor of two or even a factor of three. And actually, statistically, single men in the church have a slight edge over single women. And I looked at that and I thought that is very surprising.
There are more single men than single women?
Proportionally.
Wow.
Which, I know, it sounds very surprising. So
well,
I went
in a way
and
it doesn't, because the men get hammered pretty hard on, hey, go get married.
Well, that may be true. I cannot ascertain causation simply from that. But what's interesting, though, is that nationally that's the case, that there are fewer men proportionally who have married than women who have married at some point in their lives. So Mormons are not actually that different than what's going on nationally. And then looking at the previous work that's been done on Mormons, single men outnumber single women in the Pew study, also in the 2016 PRRI study about religion in America. So ours is the third national study in which single men have this slight edge over single women in Mormonism, and you would never guess that just sitting in a, you know, young single adult fireside, for example. But statistically, that does appear to be the case. What do you think?
I'd want to follow up with that, and I think we did at some point, I just don't remember off the top of my head, of those who attend weekly.
Exactly.
What was the breakdown with
right.
those ones? Yeah.
Right.
So that'd be something to look at.
Well, and I find that very interesting, too, because even there is a difference, right? There is a difference. But we found in terms of breaking down orthodoxy by marital category, that single men had the lowest levels of belief and adherent behavior of any marital category. So single women, single or married men,
so
married women.
Why we see more
right
at the
far right.
sides.
Not
well.
To
yeah.
you know, if there are single men in your audience who are very orthodox and doing all of the things,
yeah.
this is in no way to diminish what they're doing. But
do we have any sense on? Is it true that even though there may be more single men in the church, they attend at a lower rate than
That's
the women?
That's what he's saying.
Is that what you're
yeah.
saying? Do we know that?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yes. Remember
That's
though that it's entirely
step, right?
self-reported. Right. It's entirely self-reported, and so we try to take that at face value as much as we can. But there are a couple of other examples within the survey itself in which people's self-reported behavior doesn't necessarily align. So we have a couple of different ways of measuring church attendance, for example. There is the general question that's asked on a lot of surveys about religion. Are you a person who comes more than once a week, weekly, a couple times a month, etc.? And that we had very nice presentation from Mormons of all ages. When we asked, though, in the Sabbath question, have you been to church in the last 30 days for millennials, and particularly for younger men, that gap between the people who say that they attend weekly and who actually have been in the last 30 days was wider. So that's an interesting Right.
And that's not uncommon with survey research either. People tend to over-report behaviors that people see as desirable. For example, mm-hmm. I know in political science research, we ask random samples of the American population, did you show up to vote in the last election? And by that standard, we've got like 85% voter turnout in the United States. Right? Exactly. So, and we see the same thing, like other sociology of religion research has shown similar things with, for example, like religious service attendance. People are, they don't want to say to the person on the other end of the phone, nah, I don't go all that often, right? Because, I mean, that's getting less and less to be the case, but historically speaking, that's been seen as a normatively desirable thing to say that you do in American society. And so
you go to church, but you haven't been in the last 30 days.
Right. Well, and that is a question that kind of gets at how we view ourselves. We want to see ourselves in a particular way. And in Mormon culture, that's very much the way that we are active. I can criticize people for this all day long, but I'm very humbled by the fact that I did this. I took a survey that was given by the CDC, and I could see that, you know, the Centers of Disease Control is calling me on the phone. Why would they be calling me? It was a survey. And it was about my health habits. And I found myself answering, yes, I go to yoga twice a week. Like, no, I don't. I mean, that's entirely aspirational. If I make it once a week to yoga, that's a good week, right? But I said I go to yoga twice a week. And so I essentially more than doubled my actual participation in this socially desirable activity.
I think this brings up another really important and interesting pattern that we found with this. When we're looking at American Latter-day Saints, it's a different group of people than the ones that the church defines as its members, right? When in General Conference the church reports its membership and growth, et cetera, it's looking at the number of people it has on the records, right? And that's a legitimate way of measuring that. Social scientists, when measuring religious identity, go with self-identification. They just ask, like, which of the following religions do you identify with, if any, or just say which religious tradition do you identify with, and then just count the responses there. And so we know from other statistical research that's been done in the church that estimates of activity amongst church members from the church's perspective is somewhere around like a third, 40%, right, of the people who are on the records, who are there showing up every Sunday and active and doing things there. In our survey, that was much, much, much higher. There was a solid, I think, 85% of the people who identify as a Latter-day Saint are saying, yes, I'm there, I'm active, I attend church, et cetera, et cetera. So what that implies to us then is that the rest that the church is saying aren't active, the remaining like 50 to 60%, when asked on a public opinion survey, don't even identify as LDS.
Okay.
So that's an important thing to look at. Amongst a variety of different religions, there is a space where you can say, yeah, I'm a Catholic, but I never go. Or, yes, I identify with this, but, like, I haven't darkened the doorway of a church for 30 years. But, you know, that's still part of the identity. It seems like this is suggestive to us that there's less of a space for that within the LDS community. If you're not actively going, people tend to just not identify as such. And I think that's an interesting question worth pursuing. Why would that be? And what is it about the LDS community that leads to it being, if I'm not actively doing the stuff, then I'm not even identifying either. I don't feel comfortable identifying. I think that's interesting.
Well, and that's interesting because one of the things that kept going through my mind, and if you guys can comment on this, that'd be great, is this book about people that I go to church with? Because it sounds like it might not be. Mm. Is that, what do you think?
It not might not be in what way?
Well, because I still sit there, and I know we talked about the word of wisdom, but I just sat around here and I said, I cannot believe that 40% of the people here are drinking coffee.
Well, first of all, we should clarify that that question is only, have you had the following substance at least once in the last 6 months? There's a far cry from, you know, people drinking coffee regularly and maybe they had a sip of it and had to answer yes on a question, you know? So let's not exaggerate what that may mean.
Okay. And it is lower amongst the people who said that they're active.
Right. Especially for
I know that I kept looking at this book and just saying, does this apply to my congregation? And it sounds, and please correct me if I have any wrong perceptions here, but it sounds to me like you guys went out of your way to get a not necessarily church-going group of Mormons, but just a, and maybe that's more representative, because I kept saying, I don't think these are church-going Mormons. These are Mormons that might go to church or might not go to church. Is that?
But 86% of them say that they are somewhat or very active in the church, okay, which is an exceptionally high rate.
So would it be a reasonable conclusion to say, okay, this book is representative of the people in my congregation?
It depends a lot on where you live.
Right.
I mean,
I was going to say, what's your congregation
like? You live in Utah, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm in Utah County, so
you cannot extrapolate your Utah County experience to the nation as a whole. And I think that our research shows that there is a difference in orthodoxy, there's a difference in attendance, there's a difference in authority issues, like are you more likely to follow the prophet or follow your own conscience? All of those things, Utah Mormons are more stalwart than Mormons elsewhere in the country. So, you know, not to say nasty things about where we live. We're filming this in Kentucky. Ben lives here in Kentucky. I live just over the river in Ohio. And yeah, those are the people in our wards. There's more diversity. There are more converts, and converts are not quite as stalwart in some ways as people who are born into the church and kind of steeped in the culture of the church. So
would it be safer to say that this would be representative of worldwide Mormons and not necessarily Utah Mormons?
No, just the United States.
Just the United States, that's right.
That would be a wonderful avenue of research that I really hope we can pursue in Mormon social science. But right now the infrastructure does not really exist internationally to get great information about Mormons in other countries.
Okay, so this is primarily United States. Okay. Including Alaska and Hawaii?
Yes.
Okay.
Including Alaska and Hawaii.
I suppose the best metaphor I could use is if you're going to take all of the congregations in the United States and then randomly pick one, this book looks like an average, typical, if you take all of the United States and put them together in a room and say, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? Or all the people who say that they're LDS and put them in the room and say, how many of you, by show of hands, think this or do this, et cetera, et cetera. That's what this book should be interpreted as.
Well, because, you know, Utah Mormons definitely have a reputation among, especially the United States. It's like, oh, no, that guy just moved in from Utah. He's going to be the bishop next week and tell me what to do. So, yeah, that's kind of interesting to kind of put that in perspective, because I know, and I've lived outside of Utah. I spent 4 years in New Hampshire, got my New England accent, parked my car in Harvard Yard. And then I spent 2 years in the South, South Carolina, Georgia. So I can turn on the drawl down there and, you know, go Bulldogs. So do you guys break out, I guess, Utah Mormons versus everybody else in the book?
Not so much in the book. I did write a column about that for RNS, just giving 10 highlights of ways that Utah Mormons were different. Yeah.
Can you highlight a few things? How are Utah Mormons different than...
Politically more conservative, which will surprise no one.
Mm-hmm.
The authority issue I thought was very interesting, more likely to privilege following church leadership, following the prophet, more likely to watch general conference, more likely to attend church, more likely to have larger families, more likely to be married. What am I missing?
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Yeah.
One of the...
More.
Yeah. Again, one of the interesting things about trying to interpret this is that we have some preliminary evidence. It's not here in the book, but when we look at the former Mormons who are also in this sample, and we're focusing on the current ones right now, but we also collected some information about them, it's interesting to see, and again, this has not been through the peer review process. This is a preliminary project that we're working on, but there's some tentative evidence that suggests that when people become less active in Utah, they're more likely to just stop identifying as LDS, whereas outside of Utah, if they become less active or have been moderately active, they're still likely as not to say, yes, I'm a member. And so it could be that the Utah Mormons are more stalwart on everything, or it could just simply be that when they stop being stalwart, they stop saying that they're LDS at higher rates in Utah, right, than in other places in the country. So that's something else to be thinking about in terms of how we're interpreting this data that we're seeing. It all depends on who's saying, yes, I'm a member, and how we're counting that. And that differs a lot in different parts of the country.
Very interesting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Reese and Dr. Knoll. You know, the subtitle of their book, The Next Mormons, is How Millennials Are Changing the Church. How is that happening exactly?
Well, they are not quite as politically conservative. They are not flaming liberals by any stroke of the imagination. They're still Mormons, and so they're more conservative than other people their age, but they are less conservative than older Latter-day Saints politically, and I think in terms of their religiosity, they are, again, in between. So millennials as a whole in the nation are the generation that we're seeing to be most likely to disaffiliate of any generation that we've been tracking in American history.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, Please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available at either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript. And over here, we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.